Welcome to another episode of the Bexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer, and I think it's fair to say Theresa May shocked us all on Tuesday with her call for a snap election. If you're a bit confused about the why, when, and how, you've come to the right place because we brought on Henry Newman, who's the director of think tank Open Europe, to talk us through his view of the situation. To stay up to date on all future Brexit news and opinions as well, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
Well, everyone, welcome back to the Brexit Podcast. Daily Mail this morning had Crush the Saboteurs on its front. The Sun had Blue Murder. The Times said May heads for election landslide. Brenda from Bristol said, not another one. And Jonathan Pye decides it's time to get Jeremy Pine out with his effing paint roller and paint the whole map blue because it'll be Chairman May come June the 8th. Henry, what's going to happen?
I wouldn't want to be presumptuous, but I think it's obviously likely that Theresa May will be returned as Prime Minister and can expect, hopefully, to increase the majority. But I suspect there'll be quite a lot of political flux within that overall result. This is a bold decision, and it's nothing is certain in an election or indeed in a referendum, as we saw last year. So we won't know the outcome until we know the outcome.
Yeah, quite. I guess the one thing is that we should say that the snap election needs to be approved first, and it needs 2/3 of the MPs in the House of Commons to approve this. That's correct, isn't it?
That's my understanding, but I think it's every likelihood that will be approved, and I suspect there would be, in any event, other vehicles available to the Prime Minister. Given that the Prime Minister is determined to call an election and the main opposition parties have agreed to support her, it will be very hard to see that not happening.
Yeah, the only one who seems unhappy about this is Nicola Sturgeon, says a huge political miscalculation to call one.
Well, right, I mean, indeed, but she was also complaining about having to deal with an unelected Prime Minister, I don't think she can really have it both ways.
No, fair point.
And I think, obviously, we've also seen the departure of George Osborne this afternoon, which I think is I disagreed with him about the referendum, but I worked closely with him in government, and he's a huge loss to politics, so something to reflect on there as well.
Can you give us a bit more insight into his motivations for leaving?
I don't know his motivations for leaving, but I suspect that he had determined that it would be difficult to balance the editorship of a major newspaper during an election campaign, but I don't have that insight.
Okay, so could you give us a little bit more insight into what the predictive polls are looking like at the moment?
Yeah, so my understanding is that Theresa May is expected to do very well. She's been enjoying extremely substantial poll leads over Jeremy Corbyn. And crucially, of course, those polls have been taken at a time when the country hasn't been focused on the decision of who should govern. They've been taken at a sort of, to use a poor phrase, peacetime. And of course, as we get closer to the reality of a general election and people are confronted with making a decision, we may see those polls move. But I think that'll continue to play into the Prime Minister's favour, although, of course, I don't take the electorate for granted. But I think also if you look at the question of leadership, Theresa May is streets ahead of Jeremy Corbyn, and also on economic management. She has a much stronger claim to have staked out a position of competently managing the economy than Jeremy Corbyn could have. And I think we should also expect a lot of potentially negative campaigning from some quarters and newspapers full of stories of Jeremy Corbyn's, quote, loony left background or supposed association with less than salubrious characters.
Yeah, I guess those sort of headlines have polarizing effect.
Yes.
So in terms of, you said that it could work out quite well for May. And in the Guardian poll, it said 55% of respondents have backed the decision to call for an early general election. Do you feel that's the case because there's a correlation between Leave voters and the elder generations and therefore Tory voters, and those would all, and they are the people that vote, where traditionally the younger generations have not been going to the ballot boxes? And maybe you think that might change now because people have become more politically energized, I suppose, by the events of the past 18 months.
I don't yet know and haven't yet got a sense for what turnout's likely to be and how engaged people will be with the with this particular political process. But you're right that, of course, the referendum campaign did enjoy a large turnout and also motivated a huge amount of the country to take part in a political discussion. So it remains to be seen whether this election carries that over, but it's certainly possible. And I think it's also likely that, as I said, there will be some degree of flux, particularly in urban metropolitan areas in London and elsewhere. There'll be some shift away from the Conservatives amongst those who who voted Remain and have also not come to terms with the result. But I think there are also other people who voted Remain but are now very keen just to get on with the decision and will see this as a chance to endorse the Prime Minister's plan. And even though they may have felt differently in June of last year, they now want to see that plan delivered in the country just to get on with it, for lack of a better expression.
It will definitely be interesting to see how voter demographics and turnout change, especially considering that just on Tuesday alone, since the snap election was called, over 150,000 of people have registered to vote, so that's quite something. Mm. But on a slightly different note, I think a lot of people have been sort of accusing May of just wanting to get out of proper parliamentary scrutiny with a strong sort of opposition party, just so she can hammer Brexit through the way she wants to. How do you see that?
I think it's hard to describe the current lead opposition party as strong. I think that there is no better scrutiny in a democracy than putting yourself to the test of a general election. So I think that to go back to the earlier point I made in relation to Nicola Sturgeon, Theresa May is an unelected prime minister. That's acceptable in our democracy, but it's a challenge for her, particularly if she seeks to deviate from the manifesto program laid out by David Cameron. And also, as we're going into the referendum in Brussels, but also in the UK, arguments are raging as to what the referendum result really meant as we go into those negotiations. And I think this is a chance for her to have clarity on, via the manifesto process, as to whether Britain ought to leave the single market and ought to leave the customs union as it comes out of the European Union. So I think it'll actually help to answer some of those questions that otherwise have, I think, unnecessarily, but nonetheless, have been in flux.
Why do you think that May was so keen to rule out a general election before 2020 then, in which she made that statement in June last year, and she's said it a few times since?
I think marginal MPs, particularly for the Conservative Party, were very reluctant to see another election, but some of that political imperative is certainly shifted by the very substantial poll lead that she enjoyed, but also the strong endorsement that her Brexit program has already from the public. And I think that ultimately, as well, this is the right policy decision. There's a growing recognition that leaving the European Union in March of 2019, as we're currently scheduled to do, would fall very close to a scheduled election in May of 2020. Any transition agreements or phasing or implementation period would bridge over that gap. And that could be very challenging for the Prime Minister. So this will allow her to have a new five-year mandate and her own mandate specifically to deliver Brexit, but also on domestic policy matters as well.
Speaking of which, actually, I'm quite curious what you think the key issues in this election are going to be in regards to Brexit, but also more generally.
Well, I think all elections fundamentally come down, above all else, to two things, one of which is leadership and the other of which is the economy. I think that this will have a particular angle in the sense of people will be particularly thinking about leadership in the context of who do you want to be sitting in the negotiating chamber arguing on behalf of the UK. And I think Theresa May will win that by a country mile versus Jeremy Corbyn, and also on the economy, as I said, I think she'll be very strong. But I think there will be some inclination from voters to consider supporting other parties to try and put a check on a so-called hard Brexit, or to try and shift to a different policy position. So we'll see more of that in the coming weeks, and as polls switch from being a hypothetical finger in the air towards actually questions being asked to people who are considering a general election coming in a few weeks' time. And if I could just quickly say something about Brussels, which I think is always important as well, and the Prime Minister's position in the negotiating chamber. If you think about international meetings or summits or European councils, there are two sorts of leader sitting around those tables. There are two sorts of heads of state or heads of government. There are the leaders who have won an election already, and there are the leaders who have yet to win an election. And assuming that Theresa May wins the election on June the 8th, she will switch from one category to the other, and that will shift her standing vis-a-vis her colleagues in Brussels in the negotiations, which, of course, matter so much for Britain's future relationship with the EU and, indeed, for our economy more broadly.
Yeah, there's a very real sense that the bickering in Westminster's got under her skin, which she alluded to in her speech yesterday, and she wants to put that one to bed finally. In terms of the other parties that could do well in the election, who would you see prospering? I mean, the Lib Dems potentially can't do any worse than 2015. So coming from a sort of left debate with Labour's leadership so weak at the moment, do you think they could pick up a few more seats?
Again, I'm going to be very skeptical about, very careful about making predictions, but I think that the Liberal Democrats reached an absolute rock bottom in 2014 in the locals and 2015 in the general. So I find it hard to imagine they would not do better than where they currently are. Equally, the SNP, I would suspect, have reached something of a high watermark and will see presumably a shift of vote share away from them, even if not a shift of seats.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that the MPs will not be doing is overspending on their election campaigns this time round. There's been a few allegations that perhaps they called the general election to mask the Tories' expenses, a brewing Tories' expenses scandal. Have you got a view on that at all?
I haven't followed those allegations closely, but I find it very hard to believe that that would have been the case.
Okay, thank you. Just if May, by some shock, and there have been a few shocks in the past 12 months in terms of elections, does lose this election, what then for Brexit? Is it an irreversible process as we currently stand, or could the whole thing be thrown back up in the air?
Well, that's a very good question. I think it would be difficult for it depends what in what capacity she loses, and whether she would, you know, whether there'd be a minority government, whether there would be a coalition of which she was a part, or whether there was a coalition of others from which she was excluded. So I think it's very hard to speculate on that. But I don't think anything is completely irreversible, no.
May's also said that she won't be taking part in any TV debates ahead of the election. How do you see the motivation behind that? And do you think that's going to be an advantage or a disadvantage for her?
Well, I think it's definitely for her advantage not to take part in television debates. I have mixed views on television debates. As something of a political geek myself, I enjoy watching them, but I don't think that they necessarily do inform the public hugely about the election in a way that they can't. In a way that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get that information. So I'm not convinced that television debates do a huge amount for informing the public. On the other hand, I think what they do is periodize the campaign in a particular way, and they can change the momentum and the dynamics of a campaign. So I can completely see why Theresa May will be reluctant to commit to television debates, and particularly coming, despite the Theresa May's decision to seek a personal mandate, we don't have a presidential system in the United Kingdom. We have a parliamentary system, and she is, of course, the leader of the Conservative Party, but nonetheless, it's a slightly different presentation from, say, the United States or indeed France.
Yeah, I did find it, when she was asked this question earlier today on Radio 4, I did find it a bit curious that she says that she just likes to go around knocking on doors of houses and getting her message across that way. And I just felt that if you have a platform to, you know, the whole country in quite a kind of popular TV format, you have more of an opportunity to speak to more people.
Possibly. I think there's a sort of a whole broader debate to be had about the changing way in which politicians interact with the media. Indeed, the media interacts with politicians. And if you go back to the 1970s and the 1980s, you would have long discursive interviews, including soft interviews from the leader of the opposition or the then prime minister on radio and on television broadcast. And we've shifted away from that. We've shifted to having interviews of a maximum of about 10 minutes. In a much more combative format. And I don't think the public necessarily like that, but equally that's just the sort of reality that we're in. So I don't necessarily see that changing much before June.
How would you characterize a compelling alternative to that? What is a better way to keep the public informed on your standpoint in the election and to get them more engaged in politics, to raise your awareness as a politician, like your profile as a politician in the country? What would you think is a better way to do that?
I'm not sure it's a question of better. I just think it's a question of different. That it's a statement of fact that the way that politicians interact with the media has changed. And if you go back to the 1970s and 1980s, the style of interview was extraordinarily different. And we've seen, to be fair to Theresa May, her doing some of this recently. She's gone back to she agreed to, I think, unlike certainly anybody that I can remember, she did a sit down interview with Andrew Neil for half an hour. A few weeks ago to discuss her Brexit policy, and I think that was something quite surprising, and I think it was a sort of helpful and informative interview as far as those things go, but I think the public also has quite a clear sense of what Theresa May is standing for and what she believes in, so I'm not sure that necessarily an election debate would really improve things that much. The point she made today in Prime Minister's questions, we see her debate Jeremy Corbyn every single week. So I'm not convinced that necessarily this would really be that helpful.
In terms of the Brexit process, there's obviously a lot of work to do before Britain leaves the EU. We'll throw in a general election in there on June the 8th. Is that going to stall things even further? And is that a concern, or will that be we're just going to clear the decks and so we can crack on more quickly?
Well, we're lucky in this country in that we have rapid elections and removal truck politics. So we will know who is running Britain by June the 8th. And that you know, we don't have the sort of problems of proportional representation or sort of coalition shifting or whatever else in this country with, you know, very, very few historical exceptions. So I expect that we'll have a clear new government in place very, very quickly. And of course, it's not just Britain where there's a general election being held. The French president and the German chancellor are also being elected as we over the next few months. So it won't be until late September that we know who is running the three most important powers in Europe. And I think it's Britain. This is the sort of as good a time as any for Britain to have this election, and then we can go into the autumn to hopefully what will be a period of parallel negotiations on both the exit package for the UK and the future relationship, knowing who those three governments are that will be crucial, the most crucial within the EU27 and Britain.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please feel free to subscribe to us and follow us on the usual social networks at Brexit Podcast and at brexitpodcast.com to stay up to date on all the best Brexit news and opinions. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming and Warren Paul, and our theme song is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod.